This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at Ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a game day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day Preview podcast from TalkSport, the ultimate preview of the weekend action as we look at all 10 games in a faster time than it would take for Manchester United to break from defence into attack with the help of Nemanja Matic. What a pass. This week, the race to earn a place in next year's Champions League is as busy, loud and congested as Cristiano Ronaldo's new clothes. Chelsea, Manchester United, Wolves and Leicester are all in action on game day this Saturday, and TalkSport has commentary of them all. Also this week, we examine the relegation fight with West Ham, Watford, Villa and Norwich all featuring, all on the podcast that is only marginally more indecisive than Kepa de Balaga. It's the Game Day Preview podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day Preview podcast from TalkSport. Darren Lewis from The Mirror is here. Hello.
Hello.
Lovely to see you again. And Alex Crook is here as well. I must admit, it's not so lovely to see you. You seem to get very close to the camera when we're doing the Zoom call. Your head is like, you know, right in there, isn't it? You know, like you want to be involved.
I'm trying to read a script at the same time.
Darren, have you had a good week?
I have had a very good week. Saw a couple of decent games, one of which was Arsenal's win over Norwich on Wednesday night. Very impressed by Aubameyang. Also sad that he won't be staying. I know the club reckon he will, but if they don't finish in the Champions League places, I'll be very surprised if he does. And the Norwich game the other day, I loved seeing six strikers struggling to break down a Norwich side with 10 men. Harry Maguire, of course, scoring the winning goal in that match. But yeah, two good games. My first two since the lockdown. And I've enjoyed it.
I went to West Ham on Wednesday night. I went on Monday night to the League Two playoff final at Wembley, and I must admit, it's the first night where I've sat in a stadium and thought, don't quite like this. Really? I think it was because it was at Wembley. I think it was because it's a 90,000 seater stadium and there was nobody there. The decoration of the stadium I thought was pretty poor. I thought they could have done a lot more with it. I know they haven't got that much money, but they could have done a mosaic of all the EFL supporters and used it for the three playoff finals that they've got, plus maybe in their leasing.com trophy. But look, that's by and by. I think it's just a playoff final is for the fans, it's for the people of that community, and I felt a little bit weird that there was nobody there. It felt a bit hollow.
Well, I did the semi-final, didn't I? Exeter's second leg, and I can completely relate to that because this is a team going to Wembley, and at the full-time whistle, it just felt very flat as the sets of players made their way single file back to the dressing room, no fans to celebrate. So listen, we're going to have to accept it, but I think there are certain games and certain competitions that we're going to feel it more than most. And probably actually that West Ham win over Chelsea would fall into that category because West Ham fans are still trying to make new memories at the London Stadium. And that would have been an iconic night to be there. And unfortunately, such a fabulous victory happened behind closed doors.
Well, West Ham fans don't like that place at all. And I think if we hadn't have had a pandemic, the protests against the ownership would have been a lot more vociferous. Anyway, we'll get on to what's going to happen this weekend very shortly. Just on supporters going into grounds, Darren, the change this weekend from 2 metre to 1 metre could make a big difference, couldn't it, about eventually welcoming spectators back into the stadiums?
It could, but I have to be honest and be a little bit of a party pooper as well. Because on the one hand, I do agree with what you're saying about the atmosphere, which is why I always watch the games if I do on TV with the crowd noise, because I need to feel the atmosphere more than anything else. And there is also the point for me, when I go to games as a print writer, and I know a lot of your print writers will be listening to this, they'll understand this. you spend half the game typing away, during night matches. And when you have a crowd, the crowd noise kind of alerts you to the fact that there is action in the final third. When you don't have that crowd noise, something could happen, whether it's a goal, whether it's a sending off, and potentially you could miss it. I don't, because I'm an amazing reporter. But even Lucy, your producer's laughing at that one. You know, on a serious note, public safety is paramount, and I'm not a particular fan of reducing 2 meters to 1 meter. My first thought is for public safety. So yeah. I'm not as excited as a lot of people are about the potential for that to happen. We still do have people losing their lives in this country, and we still don't have anywhere near the record that other countries have in terms of dealing with the coronavirus. So I'm not
a much worse record than
well, indeed, I was trying to be diplomatic. But honest, no, you're absolutely right.
It's terrible. And, you know, I think I'm still a little bit perplexed that there is a football match that is going on this weekend in a town that has been, or a city that has been locked down. Very, very odd. Anyway, talking of which, let's get to the big game previews.
A thrilling game at the London Stadium has finished West Ham United 3, Chelsea 2.
Our frustrations tonight need to be used in a positive manner, which means that when Watford come to the Bridge on Saturday, we're ready to go.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal by Christian Pulisic!
Team's looking really strong. I just like the energy and the synergy about it.
Watford 1, Southampton 3, that's how it's finished. And as you say, not a day that Watford will look particularly fondly on after this one.
It's a frustrating time for us because we know we're capable of producing better performances.
Star is racing past Van Dijk. He's faced up by the goalkeeper and he's shot it beyond him, and Watford have a 2-0 lead.
They now fall into that category of where's their goals coming from, because they just look like at the minute they haven't got a goal in them.
Well, the top four race is firing up nicely, and Chelsea against Watford is on 8 o'clock Saturday night, live on game day. It will be the last of our five commentaries on Saturday. Chelsea's performance unimpressive against West Ham in midweek. Frank Lampard, I think, was rightly furious after the match. I spoke to him straight afterwards, and he was furious about the terrible set-piece defending. I mean, he basically said to me they were too small, Chelsea. He said, but there's nothing I can do about that. The squad is the squad, but even if you're too small, you've got to get close to people. Indecision from the goalkeeper doesn't help. Alonso, poor all night at left-back. Rudiger forgetting a basic discipline of showing a player who loves to come inside right at the end. Chelsea may well have beaten Manchester City this season. Very well. I thought they were excellent during that game. Liverpool, they were brilliant in the FA Cup game against them. Tottenham, they were great in both matches against them. And Arsenal this season. But they have lost to Bournemouth, Southampton, Newcastle and been doubled by West Ham. Now, Frank's talked about the consistency of the group on a number of occasions. But if they aren't up for a fight against Watford, they will suffer another disappointing result. What does he have to change, Darren?
I think he has to be more rigid. I think that the players have to be made more aware that other players could come in and take their places. I don't think that there is enough of an awareness as far as that's concerned. I don't think that win for West Ham was a fluke. West Ham have been putting in some decent performances without getting the luck that they deserve. Defensively, they are still very uncertain. But I certainly think as far as Chelsea are concerned, the front players need to be playing better. Willian was the guy who basically bailed them out of a hole. What does work in Chelsea's favour is that the last time these two teams played was last November. It was the 11th game without a win for Watford after Chelsea managed to come out winners. And now Watford are back in that run. Because remember, Flores was replaced by Pearson soon after that win. And Pearson had pulled them out of trouble. But now, and they've been brilliant during the lockdown, as we all know, but off the pitch they've had a few issues and suddenly they've been sucked in again. I still do think they'll be okay. The bottom three teams at the moment will go down.
Well, look, Watford looked devoid of confidence last week when they were spanked by Southampton. They've had their issues off the field. I mean, how much do you think the Watford morale has been damaged by Andre Gray's little mixing?
I think there will be players in that Watford dressing room, and in particular Troy Deeney, who will be very frustrated and annoyed by what Andre Gray did. I don't think Watford particularly are going to miss Andre Gray or Chalobah.
No.
I don't think Watford particularly...
They don't play, do they?
Well, no, exactly. And when they do play, they don't play very well. I mean, Andre Gray's record in front of goal, considering how much he costs, is pretty lamentable, really. But I do think Deeney in particular, who obviously had his concerns, his son is asthmatic. about the whole idea of Project Restart, and I think he will realise that Andre Gray has been negligent, and I think that will be a problem in terms of morale of the players. I don't know. I know the job that is in hand, and I think they're big enough, they've got big enough character to crack on with that. But more important is the confidence. And you look at it, 6 points from the last 10 games. To put that into perspective, they took 13 points from Pearson's first six matches, so they've certainly levelled out. I always felt like that start of the season could come back to haunt them. I think Darren's right, there will be three worst teams, and I think Pearson will get Watford organised enough that they will pick up the odd point here and there, maybe even at Stamford Bridge to get them over the line. But yeah, I think there will be an annoyance in the dressing room without a shadow of a doubt.
One win in 11, Darren. Have they got enough to cause Chelsea a bit of an issue? Because Chelsea are a patchy team. You know, after committing to Werner and Ziyech and bidding for Havertz, they can't afford to go through a bad patch at this stage of the season, can they? They need a Maguire or a Nicholas Schüler or someone who just loves defending. Obviously, they need a new goalie. I've said this so many times. He's just not good enough. But and whatever that costs, I mean, they're going to have to write off the $71.6 million that they paid for him. It was a mistake. It was the biggest and most expensive mistake that's probably been made in recruitment for a long time. But just have to accept it, own it, move on.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's never a £71.6 million goalkeeper. I think they've got to replace him. I actually think that Chelsea need to be in the market for another centre-half in the summer, somebody who's commanding, somebody. I think they should be in the market for a Koulibaly. I know it's a very expensive deal to do, but they need that kind of authority at the back, because once you brought in Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool, you finally had the platform for the offensive players to be able to express themselves. And that's what Chelsea, they've got wonderful offensive players, as we all know. But at the back, they have a mistake in them.
Well, they
and
have.
The players they've got alongside Rudiger are not the answer.
Well, they have got good offensive players, in a sense, but they still don't really score enough goals. I mean, against West Ham last on Wednesday night, they scored two goals. One of them was a penalty, and the other one was a free kick from the edge of the penalty area. Most of their efforts were from the edge of the box. They weren't carving West Ham open. Pulisic has been great since he came back from the lockdown, but they haven't got that sort of penetrative goal-scoring forward. I mean, I said in commentary, Tammy Abraham doesn't get enough credit for the fact that it's his first Premier League season. He scored 15 goals for Chelsea in all competitions and one for England. That's 16 goals over the course of the season. Everyone's going crazy because Danny Ings has got 19 goals in all competitions and he's like the best thing since sliced bread. But Tammy Abraham is his first season. He's 20 years of age. He's come out and scored 15 goals in his first season in the Premier League. He's had a few bad misses. He's had a bit of a tough patch because he picked up an injury. I think we should also appreciate this, his first season in the top flight of English football. I don't think he should just be discarded as someone who misses a lot of chances. I think the problem is he scored a lot of those goals earlier in the season. He's been dry since then.
I agree with you both. I think that Danny Ings has scored his goals in a poor side, and in a better side, maybe he'd thrive. But then again, in a better side, maybe he wouldn't play. So I think as far as Abraham's concerned, you've got to give him credit. There are a lot of strikers. You look at Taimi Pukki, for example. Great first half of the season. Goals have dried up. Yeah. I remember after the Lille Champions League tie, Frank Lampard said he wanted to bring in quality. And I was in that press conference because I remember saying to him, if you bring in the quality, what about these players that you've been championing for so long? And he said, this is Chelsea. The standards are high. And it's we can't have too many more matches where we create so many chances and we can't put them away. And that's why I still would be very, very interested to see whether or not Chelsea will slap down an amount of money for Arsenal for Aubameyang that would make them think, we got a decision to make here. Because Aubameyang is a killer in front of goal. Fastest player ever to reach 50 goals in the Premier League. And he, you know, forget about his age. When you've got that instinct to score goals and you look after yourself, you will score goals. And even if they get 2-3 seasons out of him, that will be money well spent.
You think Chelsea, after signing Werner and Ziyech, might go for Aubameyang?
Well, Werner plays off the left, doesn't he?
Can do,
and and Abraham's still learning the game. And even if you played Werner up front, he still needs time to adapt to English football, first of all. And also, you need depth as a top club competing for top honours. When you look at the sides that have plundered silverware,
I'm with you. I think this is a great idea.
They have depth up front.
I'm there. Where do I sign? This is great. I'm up for this. This is a good idea.
I just think that, you know, Arsenal in recent seasons have seen top talent lose either for less than their market value or for free. They cannot afford to see that happen again with Aubameyang.
Let's take
all
him
the
out
talk
it.
About, you know, he might stay and the noises that Arteta's putting out the other night. He hasn't signed a new deal and we are into a period now where Arsenal have a decision to make. If I'm Chelsea, I put the money down and let's see what they're made of.
Chelsea's position in the top four is under threat because of the league form, in particular of Manchester United, who was sumptuous against Brighton in midweek and will be like a bunch of kids at Christmas waiting to tear a Bournemouth team to shreds. They look flawed in midweek. We'll come to Bournemouth in a second, but let's talk about Manchester United. 15 unbeaten, 4 goals conceded during that period. Is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer getting enough credit? Crook, you laughed me off earlier in the season on this podcast when I said changing the manager is unwise. You've got to be patient, believe in the system, wait for the recruitment to take hold. Is it different now?
Yeah, you can't argue with the record. 14 games unbeaten. Is it 15 now, actually?
15.
They're scoring goals for fun. They're not conceding goals. Their record defensively since the turn of the year has been very good. In Fernandes, they have a player who's genuinely making them purr. Mason Greenwood, I think, coming into the team has been a great introduction. Again, you have to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer praise there because there are a lot of United fans crying out for Greenwood to play regularly much earlier in the season, but he held him back until he was ready to come in his opinion helped his development. So there's not much wrong with United at the moment, and maybe rather boldly on the sports bar the other night, I said I can't see where their next drop point is coming from, but I maintain that. I think they will get until the Leicester game on the final day of the season, definitely unbeaten and probably winning every game between now and then.
So many players are doing very well. Bruno Fernandes, his leadership, the way he speaks, his interview after the game where he turned around and basically said, I don't want to talk about me and Paul. There's so many good midfielders at this club. You know, we work so hard together. We're a team, blah. I thought that was good. I thought that just shows that he's part of the unit already and he's a bit of a leader behind the scenes. I'm particularly impressed with Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka has developed into an even better player in the second half of the season than he was before. His tackling has always been superb. His recovery is excellent. But he's starting now to get higher up the pitch and contribute to his team's attacking play as well as its defensive play. His timing, his runs better. He's being more intelligent with his creation. And he's learning and developing into an exemplary fullback. And if Trent Alexander-Arnold ends up moving into midfield, as many people predict that he will later down the line, that could be his best position. And if he does that for England, England are going to be in a particularly good position, aren't they, Darren?
Absolutely. They've got so much strength and depth, and both of those players, offensively impressive, defensively aware. And I think Wan-Bissaka has improved because the confidence in the United side has gone through the roof. You talk about that defensive record, only 10 goals conceded since Boxing Day. So for all the offensive talent and creativity, they have a platform to express themselves. I think Pogba's come back hungry and at it because he's seen how well Fernandes is doing, and it's not coincidence to see that when you surround a good player with quality, you get the best out of that player.
Yeah, and basically you have to just also play him in his right position as well, you know, give him the support that he requires, and then he's obviously going to flourish and also make him feel comfortable. It's like everybody, you know, if you're doing a job and you don't feel particularly comfortable in your surroundings, then you're not going to flourish. And
if you think about you, right, Sam, and you know, you're doing the Game Day podcast, they've said, look, give him Alex, give him Darren, give him Lucy, and you'll get the best out of him. Yeah. And that's what's happening
that's what's
now.
Happened. That's exactly what's
happened.
And
he's still working on that, isn't
so what,
he?
But, so what you're saying is I'm Pogba. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. Right, Crook.
Just one more point on this, sorry, before we move on. You mentioned Wan-Bissaka there, and I think he's a case in point. But you look at the improvement of the United players. I think actually you have to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his coaching staff credit for the work they've done on the training ground as well, because Matic is much improved.
No, Matic is because he had a pre-season for the first time in ages. He's always been a great player.
Anthony Martial has improved his finishing under the guidance of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I think sometimes we're guilty in this country. We look at the recruitment, but we don't actually look at the coaching.
Totally agree. Brandon Williams, Greenwood, Martial.
And sometimes fans get really excited really quickly, don't they? And they're desperate to call for the manager's head. I mean, sometimes one minute they're like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's great. The next minute, like, get me Maurizio Pochettino. I mean, it's just unnecessary, isn't it, Crook? Don't you think? Possibly.
Sure. Should we move on to Bournemouth?
Right, okay. Now, I do hope that we can do this. A little quick clip of a Crook's rant on Bournemouth at half-time in the game on Wednesday. Here it is.
I don't think I've ever seen a team batting relegation show such little fight. There are Bournemouth players out there sauntering around, watching their Newcastle counterparts just breeze past like they haven't got a care in the world. There's no hunger, there's no desire, they've got no idea. It has been utterly spineless. And at the moment, they are going one way, and that's into the Championship. It has been appalling.
Wow. There was no holding back there. So we've heard your rant about how bad and pathetic you thought they were during that first 45 minutes. Obviously, it didn't improve much in the second half. I mean, who loses four goals to Newcastle? So what do they do about it in order to put it right? Because, well, they're going down otherwise, aren't they?
Nothing. It's too late to put it right.
But it isn't, is it? Because there's still four or five games to go. Five games to go.
Yeah. Six. Manchester Six United away. Manchester City away, Tottenham at home, Leicester at home, Everton and Southampton at home, who've got one of the best away records in the Premier League.
Hello, is that Sam?
Listen, they're not going to sack Eddie Howe. It wouldn't surprise me when they go down, because I think it's when now and not if, that Eddie maybe would think he's gone as far as he can with that club and possibly would walk away.
If that's the case, though, he's got to do it now, isn't it?
Well, it's too late. Nobody's going to come in and save that team. The confidence is through the floor. And the reason I was so animated the other night was not so much because of the lack of ability that they showed, because I think supporters can tolerate bad performances. Supporters can tolerate their team being rubbish. What they can't tolerate is their team not trying and downing tools. And there were players on that pitch who were guilty of that. There were Newcastle players just waltzing past them. They need to show some character. They need to show some fight. Steve Cook came out afterwards and said we had an inquest in the dressing room for half an hour. Well, that's not the first time they've done that, but nothing changes. And if you keep making the same mistakes and keep trotting out the same garbage performances week after week, and you've done it for 32 matches of the season, how can you possibly change it around with six matches to play, especially with that run of fixtures I've just given you? They've got no chance. They are down and out. They are dead and buried. And it's all now whether Eddie Howe wants to stay and lead them back to promotion next season.
Come out as far as Cedric, who strikes it left-footed and scores on his debut. Cedric Suarez makes it four for Arsenal.
It's been a really good week, to be fair, after a difficult two games away from home when we lost.
Ceballos takes over, goalkeeper's come out, and Ceballos has won it.
But I just think there's a Brighton performance in Arsenal where they let themselves down a little bit.
And it's an excellent finish from Leander Dandonka, and Wolves take the lead.
We have the same confidence every game. We know that we have to work together to win the games.
Jimenez with the header, brilliant from Traore.
We are in a good position, so we just need to keep on going with that. Just thinking game by game to go as far as we can.
Wolves can set the best record of any of the teams post-lockdown when they play Arsenal live on game day. This is a 5:30 kickoff. I'll be there with Stuart Pearce. It's live on Talk Sport. Arsenal had a walk in the park at home to Norwich thanks to a couple of helping hands from Tim Krul. But they will have a much tougher task against Wolverhampton Wanderers, won't they? Alex Crook.
Yeah, they will. I mean, that, as you say, it was a stroll in the park. That was a game that Arsenal were never going to lose. They were always going to win handsomely. Aubameyang was back at the races, whereas he wasn't in the first few games after restart. But I do wonder if this Arsenal team can match the intensity that we've seen from Wolverhampton Wanderers. 45 goals they've scored this season, 33 of them in the second half. That just shows their superior fitness levels. And I'm not convinced that Arsenal have the players to cope with that. Four clean sheets in a row as well. Can Arsenal break down that defence? Wolves have been excellent in terms of stifling the opposition. They've not had five clean sheets in a row since 1981. It wouldn't surprise me if they equaled that record.
Arsenal do have, and we mentioned Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and the contract issues that they face with him, but they have tied down Bukayo Saka to a new contract in the last 24 hours, and that is a very sensible piece of business. I mean, this is a kid who's got every chance of being a superstar. I mean, he's got so much skill, talent, ability. He's versatile as well. I watched him when he was 15 years of age playing for the England under-17 team at a European tournament. And Steve Cooper, who was the manager at the time, I rang him up and said to him, look, we're covering the tournament. Can we have a chat? We talked about him and he's gushing about Saka. From what I understand, not only is he a talented footballer, but he's a brilliant kid. He's willing to work. He does a lot of study. He spent a lot of time, actually, whilst he was at that England under-17 teens tournament, I think studying for his GCSEs during that period. He is an exemplary kid, and I hope that he fulfills the potential that he has shown, and I hope that Arsenal keep the faith. Well, they're going to keep the faith with him because he's terrific and they want to keep hold of him, but I hope they can bring the best out of him.
I think they can. I think he's a player who enjoys his football at Arsenal. In the press conference after the match on Wednesday night, he was asked the very first question, actually, despite the fact that Aubameyang had scored twice and Arsenal were easy winners, the very first question in the press conference was about Saka. And Arteta said that he embodies the values and the ethos of the club, and that he was excited about working with him because he feels that he is a player that receives information particularly well, talked about his versatility as well, and talked about the fact that he is a player that Arsenal fans warm to. And I think that's very much the case. He can mould him into the kind of player that he wants in the new Arsenal, which I think will take shape over the next season or so.
Let's have a quick word about this game. Then Arsenal obviously taking on Wolves away from home. Do you think there's any chance, Crook, that Arsenal could stop Wolves in their tracks here and do Manchester United and Chelsea a favour in the process?
I don't know if Arsenal have it in their locker to go there and sit deep and try and make themselves difficult to break down. I think if they get involved in a football match with Wolves, then there's only one team that will come out on top. So in answer to your question, no, I think Wolves will win the game. And it's not beyond the realms, by the way. And I was talking about this to some friends on WhatsApp last night. Everyone's been talking about Leicester and Chelsea and whether Manchester United can catch them. It's not beyond the realms that United finished third and Wolves finished fourth.
He's getting excited again. He's getting really excited again. Chelsea lost one game, and all of a sudden he's thinking, that's it, we're going to win the league. Let's move on to Leicester versus Crystal Palace. It's on TalkSport 2 at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Leicester need to start picking up points, don't they?
Absolutely. And I think they're going to struggle against the well-organised Crystal Palace side. I think their place in the top four, as things stand, is in serious jeopardy because they haven't returned from the break with any kind of focus, any kind of cutting edge. Defensively, they've not switched back on again. And I think that one of the two teams' momentum directly behind them will overtake them. I'm less worried about Chelsea than I am about Leicester.
Oh, Darren, give it in.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, I didn't want to
say. They're a patchy team. They're going to go on a bad run now, and then I'm going to play with them. Leicester have been only out of the top four once since August the 24th. That can't change this weekend because the goal difference, Manchester United's goal difference, isn't as good as Leicester, so it won't change this weekend. But it might change over the next couple of match days, Crook.
Are you sure it won't change? Manchester United might get 12 against Bournemouth. I wouldn't rule it out. I do wonder how demoralising that FA Cup defeat would have been last weekend, because Brendan Rodgers sent a full strength team out. He went all guns blazing. They started the game really well.
Well, they didn't have Madison in that team.
Apart from him, but they've ended up losing the game again.
So full strength apart from their best player.
He was their best player. I'm not convinced he is anymore. And on that subject, is it time to consider dropping Jamie Vardy and taking him out the firing line?
There's a question. There's another question for you, okay. Just on the back
answer
of that.
A question with a question, Darren. Don't give an opinion, whatever you do.
Jamie Vardy, yeah. Bring in Danny Ings if you're Leicester.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to move on from Southampton. He's not going to win anything with Southampton, is he?
I think Callum Wilson might be more likely. Brendan Rodgers is a big fan. I know he's not had a great season, but I mean, we're chucking transfer rumours out there. Aubameyang to Chelsea. Watch that space
chucking,
with Callum Wilson.
We're well researched journalists. We're not all like you. Leicester versus Palace is live on game day. TalkSport 2, 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
The noon. Okay, let's whip round three of the Premier League games while showing our expertise as we jump on a bit of roulette rivalry. Producer Lucy will give us each one of the games of the weekend to preview against the clock. Lucy, have you got a velvet bag?
No, I haven't yet got a velvet bag, but I've actually been trying to shop for one. But the issue is they only do them in quite small sizes.
Right, well, you don't really need that many balls, so small is fine, right?
No, but if we're going to do proper FA Cup style, I think we do need quite a big sack.
Okay, so if you've got any suggestions to help Lucy find a velvet sack, we'll just tweet us at Sam Matterface, at Alex underscore Crook, or at Mirror Darren, and we will pass on anything that you suggest for Lucy to use. Are you ready to dish out Burnley, Sheffield United, Southampton, Manchester City, or Tottenham versus Everton?
Yeah, I am.
Go for it.
Crook, you're up first.
Oh, I'm never first.
Spurs v Everton.
Oh, go.
Well, this for me is one of the more iconic games in English football. Two clubs steeped in tradition, but two teams coming into the match in contrasting mood, no doubt. Tottenham were dreadful, weren't they, against Sheffield United on Thursday. Just as we thought Jose Mourinho had solved their defensive problems, my word, did they come back with a vengeance. Yes, they had a goal harshly ruled out by VAR, but that doesn't change the fact they gave away some really bad goals. And Jose's going to want to see a reaction from his players. Everton, in contrast, fantastic at home to Leicester. Hit the ground running, got the two early goals. And I think they'll go for the jugular right from the off here. Carlo Ancelotti will see this as a free hit, a chance to climb the table. It's going to be a good battle between Harry Kane and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Well, there you go.
Just saying, that was tricky.
Yeah, well, whatever. Get on with it. Stop moaning. Lucy, who's next?
Well, speaking of moaners, you're up next, Sam. Burnley v Sheffield United.
Oh, it's not fair. Sheffield United haven't played yet.
Yeah, but we know they're crap.
This is the content I want on the red button.
Go.
Burnley, I think, are above Sheffield United now, aren't they? I mean, because of the result on Monday night against Crystal Palace. But that's before they play on Thursday evening. But Burnley score more goals than Sheffield United. That's been the key to their success. When the games have been quite tight over the course of the season, Burnley have managed to come up with that little bit of ingenuity that has won them games. Like away at Manchester United, where it wasn't a particularly good game, but they found the ability to break the deadlock, and they got two goals in that match, which was a particularly good performance by Sean Dyche's team. I think obviously they came out of the lockdown rather flustered because of the contract situations that were going on, but they seem to have got themselves back together again, and they looked much better on Monday evening against Crystal Palace. Sheffield United, I went to the game on Sunday. Well, I didn't even get to talk about Sheffield United, but they're getting better. I reckon. There you go, that's my view.
No, they're not. I think they've lost their way like Leicester.
Okay,
but anyway.
So you're going to do... What's Darren going to do? I can't think.
Southampton v Man City.
Cool.
And time starts now.
Now, this really does depend on which Southampton side turns up. Will it be the Southampton side for whom Alex McCarthy threw in two goals against Arsenal, a very poor Arsenal side that were there to be put to the sword? Or will it be the Southampton side that went to Watford and took advantage of the disarray that the club are in at the moment? I think as far as the forward line is concerned, we know that they can score goals, but at the back is where they are vulnerable and they're to be taken advantage of. And a Manchester City side who are desperate to end the season in style and cement their place in the top four. How could you consider a top four without Manchester City? Will be ready to go there and take advantage of the fragile confidence at St. Mary's. I would say that Manchester City should win this.
Oh, well done, Darren. That was good. You just sort of, you know, negotiated your way through that rather easily. City, 3 wins now and a draw away from guaranteeing second place in the league. Let's have a look at the relegation picture. Newcastle versus West Ham is Sunday at 2:15. Norwich Brighton is live on game day at 12:30. It starts us off on TalkSport. And on Sunday at 4:30, a big fixture for Aston Villa. Is there any way, Darren Lewis, that Aston Villa can get something from Liverpool, who have won more games at home than anyone has ever won at home in a league season?
The only way that could happen, Sam, is if Liverpool send out the kids, and even the kids beat Everton in the FA Cup earlier this year, so I can't really see that being the case. I think Liverpool will want to aim for Manchester City's points record, and they'll want to go out on a high as well. Remember, this is the first time since they've won the league that they'll be back at Anfield, so they will want to put on a show for their supporters. And Aston Villa, well, they are the perfect candidates for them to be able to score goals, express themselves and have a bit of a party. Aston Villa's morale is shot to pieces at the moment. Everyone keeps beating them, and now they're up against the most potent front line in the Premier League. I can't see anything but a toasting in front of the fans at Anfield.
I love that. Toasting. You're going to get a toasting. Norwich against Brighton starts us off on game day, as I mentioned, 12:30. Since the start of the Premier League in 1992, not one team have gone through a whole season and not fought back once from being behind in a game to win. And Norwich are 5 games away from setting that unwanted record. And I'm not talking about Joseph Dermott's latest music release. I'm talking about the fact that they just never, ever, ever seem to have the character to come back from a difficult situation. What does that tell us about Norwich City?
Tells me they're a bit of an enigma, because I keep hearing ex-players tell us just how good Norwich City are and all the players they've got that will continue to be Premier League stars even when they go down. They've lost 21 of their 32 matches this season. They've conceded 60 goals.
Yeah.
If these players were that good, surely they would give themselves more of a chance of staying up. I just wonder, has Daniel Farker escaped criticism here this season? He's almost been given a free hit. No one's questioned any of his tactics, any of his decision making. But I'll repeat, 21 defeats in 32 games.
I think you're right. I think you're right to ask the question about Daniel Farker. I think you're right to talk about the fact that the team are unpredictable. 2 things. They've scored 6 goals away from home all season. 6 goals. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, someone like Aston Villa have scored 17 goals away from home this season. That is, it's an unbelievable tally. It's a paltry tally. I sat with a scout, actually, West Ham, on Wednesday night, and we were talking about the interest that everybody's talking with the young Norwich players. And Stuart Pearce had said on Saturday, he doesn't understand it. He doesn't understand why people were talking about Ben Godfrey, Max Ahrens, Jamal Lewis, Todd Cantwell, about, you know, this idea that when Norwich get relegated, some of the big boys are going to come and pluck them and take them into under their wing. He said they're bottom of the table for a reason. And however talented some of these players must be, ultimately, you're talking about the backbone of that Norwich City team. So why would you, as much as they might be easy on the eye and maybe in a different team they might be better, they can't be significantly better than the sum of the parts that they've already produced. So it would be a surprise, in his view, if they did get en masse plucked and taken into top half Premier League teams.
Yeah, I agree. This is a big game for Brighton, by the way. I was at the Amex in midweek. I mean, they never stood a chance against Manchester United in that kind of form. But he did leave out a couple of key players, Mope on the bench until half-time, Trossard likewise. Hopefully they'll have Adam Webster back from injury. But really, that was Graham Potter targeting this Norwich match, because they've got Liverpool and Manchester City back-to-back in their next 2 games. I think there's a feeling at the Amex Stadium that they need to win this game to all but secure their Premier League status. And if they do go on and win the game, then the decisions to rest those players in midweek will be vindicated. If they don't, then maybe questions might be asked.
Newcastle against West Ham is 2:15 Sunday. There have been 48 points played for amongst the bottom 5 since Project Restart began. And West Ham have won as many as their rivals put together in one evening at the London Stadium. That tells you a lot about the teams at the bottom of the table, doesn't it? But as David Moyes pointed out to me on Wednesday night, you need to back that up against Newcastle, because as you saw on Wednesday night, the Hammers might have a job on their hands, because this is a team that Steve Bruce has put together that are playing with a little bit of confidence, that they know they're safe now, so there's a freedom about them, and they're starting to look like a proper team.
They are, and I think it's about time Steve Bruce got the credit and the respect that he deserves, not just from Newcastle fans, but from the wider footballing public, because I think there's a view on Steve Bruce that he's a bang average manager. Well, actually, if you look at his list of honours, he took Hull City into the Premier League as championship runners-up. He took Hull City the next season to an FA Cup final that they were unlucky not to win against Arsenal. He took Birmingham City into the Premier League. He's kept Newcastle in the Premier League with matches to spare. But on the North East, Rafa Benitez, Bruce's predecessor, has this godlike status. What did he actually do that Steve Bruce hasn't? Yes, he took Newcastle to promotion from the Championship, one of the most expensively assembled Championship squads in terms of transfer fees and wage bills that we've ever seen. But was the Newcastle team that he sent out last season much better than what we're seeing from Steve Bruce this season? Yet still they won't sing his name.
Well, he's getting the tune out of Miguel Almiron. Obviously, he's got the best out of Alan Saint-Maximin. And he's also managed to give a sort of steely defence a bit of protection. So they're not conceding that many goals and they're scoring more now, which is great for them. Even Dwight Gale, who was pretty much written off as a Newcastle asset last year, is now back and scoring goals for them. Look, I don't know what the future holds for them, because everything is still so much up in the air about the ownership situation. But on Steve Bruce personally, have a look at the guy's scouting. You know, think of some of the players that he has unearthed over the course of his tenure as a Premier League manager, which is probably into its third decade now, I think, probably, at least its second decade.
He's passed the test of time.
He is a reliable coach. I think he's done a much better job at Hull than Marco Silva did. He's done a much better job at Newcastle than many other managers have managed in the last 10 years since Mike Ashley has been in charge. And, you know, I hope he gets recognised for that.
I hope he keeps his job. I think it will be a travesty if, as looks likely, the new owners come in and bring in a sexier manager, because, of course, the one thing that Steve Bruce has never been accused of is being sexy.
Apart from to Mrs. Bruce. Game day wouldn't be game day without a bit of fantasy football interest. Here's Dream Team's Andrew Butler to provide us with some gems. Hello, how are you?
Yes, very well, Sam. How are you?
Spectacular. Okay, so let's start off by going through some of the tips you've got for this weekend. Butler's banker, someone who's going to definitely yield us loads of points.
Yeah, now look, I know that this guy gets a fair bit of airtime, and especially so in the last couple of weeks, but Bruno Fernandes, I haven't spoken about him yet.
There's that sound effect again.
He's looking very, very tidy, and I think it's probably about the right time for me to say that he's worth a looking dream team. He's only in the game at 3.5 million. He's got 86 points since joining United. He averages 6.6 points per game week. That's a bit of a mouthful, which is actually the highest in Dream Team this season.
Wow.
So of any player, he's averaging 6.6 points.
Andrew, I do feel like you're a little bit late to the party, bearing in mind this is a guy who scored more goals and been involved in the making of more goals than anybody else since he signed on the dotted line back in January. Right. And it's now July. So, Crook, I mean, you've got about 10 seconds to tell us what you think about Bruno Fernandes. I know you wanted to come back on him.
I think Bruno Fernandes is Manchester United's best signing since Eric Cantona joined from Leeds way back in 1992, because
he has
galvanised the club in the same way that Cantona did, like no other player. If you compare it, I was at Brighton the other night. That was basically the same squad that started the season and were horrendous for the first half of the campaign.
Look at Darren's face.
Plus Bruno Fernandes. And honestly,
you can't possibly come on, Crook. You know I love you to pieces. Better than Ronaldo, better than Tevez. Come on, better than Dwight York and Andy Cole.
The problem is he's in this scenario, isn't he? He's been on Tinder. He's got a match. He's taken her out for a first date. He hasn't had a bike for a long time, and all of a sudden,
he wants to get married.
He wants to get married.
No,
know, but all those players that Darren's just listed joined Manchester United at the peak of their powers. This is Bruno Fernandes, who joined an ailing Manchester United, and he has the ability to turn them into title contenders next season.
Yeah, but Alex, he's got the ability, but at the moment, all he's done is given them a good run of what? 10, 12, 14 goals.
Yeah, and he made a massive impact down at Norwich, didn't he, in the FA Cup quarter final.
For Cantona, I never had a bad game. Dwight York never had a bad game.
We're winding you up. We just think you may have gone over the top. We think, I mean, not that you ever do this, but you might have gone in two-footed here.
Sam, will you marry me?
Always. Twice, at least twice between now and the end of the season. Butler's beauty, who are we picking apart from obviously Bruno Fernandes?
Well, going back to being late to the party, I'm just delighted to be invited to a party for once. Anyway,
Butler's beauty. It'll be a wedding reception.
Crook and Bruno. Alex Crook Fernandes. That's, you know, you could take
it.
Oh,
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
My Butler's beauty for this weekend is Ben Mee in the game at 2.3 million. He's got 85 points, got 18 points this game week alone. But I think he's actually been a real credit to Burnley in the last couple of weeks on and off the pitch. Obviously, his statements and his interviews after the game against Man City was fantastic. And an amazing, this amazing story about his child being born premature during the period of lockdown, and his wife is still in hospital with that, and to go and get on the score sheet and celebrate in the manner that he did was I found incredibly touching. Burnley at home to Sheffield United, which could be a 0-0, but it's probably a decent chance for another clean sheet for the Clarets.
Okay, Butler's big bet.
Yeah, now look, the big bet is always coming up for some discussion, so I'm going for Neil Mopay this weekend.
Well, at least that's a proper bet.
He's in 2.5 million, 77 points so far in Dream Team, which isn't the highest, but Brighton are away at Norwich this weekend, and it's an absolutely huge game. So they'll probably be looking to Mopay for their goals. Given that they've got Liverpool and Man City in the following two games, it really does feel like a kind of a must-win game, despite the fact that Brighton are just outside the relegation places at the moment.
Okay, what about Butler's bargain? Where are we searching to find a little hidden gem?
Yeah, now look, Alan Saint-Maximin is still only 3 million in the game.
Is amazing.
He's phenomenal. Still only 3 million in the game. He's got 91 points. He averages 7.6 points in the last five game weeks, and he was just amazing against
Wolves. Hell is he at Newcastle? I mean, how the hell have Newcastle scouted this guy? This is like, I mean, he is excellent, isn't he? And he's got so much charisma. He's funny. He's inventive. He creates goals. He scores goals. I mean, can you imagine if he was in a good team?
I do wonder what it'd be like in a better team, let's say, because, you know, what he could add to a team higher up the table would be so interesting to see. And I just wonder if he'll get given that opportunity, or if indeed
someone's going to buy him.
Yeah, well, definitely. If Newcastle's takeover goes through, and if he gets in an 11 of that, then
well, that's different.
Very
yeah.
exciting. Yeah,
I just have to say we are getting very starry eyed here. I mean, I think I might.
We
have
are.
To,
do you know what? We've been in lockdown for 100 days. For God's sake, of course we are.
I feel like I'm a priest at Las Vegas in a chapel somewhere, and everybody wants to get married. St. Maximin's had a few decent games, and everyone's going as if he's Fred Astaire. I mean, yes, he was very, very good against Bournemouth, but they're a poor side that can't defend. We've all seen, I think they've lost 18 of their 20 games, and I just think we shouldn't get carried away by him. He's a good player. And
he was good before that, though. That's not his only good performance.
Decent. But in France, they're saying that Steve Bruce is the first manager to really realise the potential of the player. And I'd like to see him over a longer period of time before I start getting excited about it.
Well, actually, I think we should probably trust Steve Bruce a little bit more, because if you go through some of the big players, not big players in the Premier League, but some of the players that have made great careers in the Premier League, he's scouted quite a few of them, hasn't he? And he's brought in players from far and wide over the course of his career, and he probably needs to be a bit more appreciated. One of those is Jarrod Bowen, who I thought was excellent for West Ham in midweek. What about the block tackle?
Now, this is interesting because Tim Closer and Lloyd Kelly are now basically having a race to the bottom of the Dream Team all-time points table for the season. Closer's on minus six, having scored minus four this week, okay. And Kelly's on minus five. And so it's an interesting point of the season to see who will actually kind of get the wooden spoon in Dream Team for the lowest point scorer this season. There's 22 players with minus points for the season on Dream Team, and I just wonder if it will be closer or Kelly, because it will probably be a Norwich or Bournemouth player the way that they're going about things at the moment.
Okay, thank you very much for your contribution to the programme, as always, Andrew Butler, and thank you very much for bringing up the wonder that is Bruno Fernandes.
Thank you very much.
What a show! The Ultimate Preview back on Monday when Crook and I will be joined by Matt Holland. Please rate and review and tell all your friends to download this podcast as well. We'll see you on Tuesday as the Football Feast rolls on. And don't forget, Saturday is game day 5, Premier League commentaries on the most special day of the week. And it's only on TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.